watched it, so I don't really know it. And I also had somebody say that I look like Ernest Hemingway.
Right. Yeah. Totally right. Definitely distinctive, but they're also not good. I mean, I obviously know the sooner Movember goes through, but you've done all right in raising funds, haven't you? You've got like 1,000 in already, haven't you? Something like this.
I've got 615.
615. Yeah. Why don't you take a moment to share the link of your Movember page into the chat stream, and we'll see where we can get some more funds in for you. You don't want to do it or what?
Yeah, absolutely. Are we live? Yeah.
Yeah, of course. I mean, so, you know.
Okay. If anybody, if I've ever been of any use to anybody that is tuned in, if I've done anything for you personally, if I've been useful on Brain Food Live or in any other way, then please give me 10 quid or something towards my fight against suicide and for mental health things. Thanks, Nick.
There you go. Excellent.
One done.
That's it. Basically, is it worth a tenner? You know, whatever. But help him get to 1,000. I think that's the plan. It's actually quite traumatic to change your appearance for a month and really look unpleasant for that period of time. I think that's difficult. So I think that's worthy of support. So please do contribute something to that. All right, we're live, everybody. So welcome to Brain Food Live on Air. It's episode 132, bringing it to you every Friday. I managed to get back from Whitstable today because I was in Whitstable for the RL 100 for the last day and a half. But I managed to get the early train back. So feeling a bit tired after a massive night last night. But what a wonderful place that is, and a great event that the guys at Recruiting Events Company organize. Wonderful get together and a getaway for recruiting leaders in the UK. So definitely hat tip to Jamie, Bobby, Matt, all the rest of the team that sort that excellent project out. And thank you very much for inviting me to join. Okay, we're talking. What are we talking about?
Hung, did you meet Lauren? Did you meet Lauren from Candidate ID? She was there. Yeah. Lauren no. Johnson. She was there.
No. Nope. She might have been. No. It was actually in separate locations, so she might have been in a different place.
She was in the Marine.
I was in the castle, so we weren't able to really connect. But yeah, next time we'll get there. All right, everybody, we do some sound checks as usual, so just want to make sure everyone can hear me okay. I think Crowdcast people are paying on the Movember, so you can definitely hear me there. Let's go to LinkedIn. I should be live on LinkedIn. If you're following me on LinkedIn, you should be getting this video. If you see this video, can you give me some indication whether you can hear the audio okay? A thumbs up, thumbs down, something like that. Just let me know, put a comment in, and then I'll be happy with that. We should be live on Facebook as well. So if you're like watching this in the Facebook group, let me know whether the audio is going okay. And we are actually natively live on Twitter these days. Periscope died. But apparently Twitter is now also supporting like live video. So if you follow me on Twitter, you also get to watch this, which is all good. Okay, we're getting a few people saying they can hear me, so that's all good. Let's get on with a quick word for our sponsors today. Our sponsors are iSIMS, one of the most progressive and popular ATSs, CRMs, and all the rest of it, all singing, all dancing, HR tool. And they wanted to sponsor this show because it actually is totally relevant to what we're talking about, because they've got all kinds of really interesting video features in what iSIMS do. In fact, they wanted me to talk particularly about their testimonial video suite, which I think has only gone live recently. So it may be something, if you are an iSIMS user or you're somebody who has got a license with iSIMS and you haven't made use of this feature, please be aware of it. It looks like you can now significantly improve your employer branding by using video natively with iSIMS. So do check them out there. Final, we are also going to be talking about this in a webinar on the 24th of November. That's when myself, Fossway, and iSims are going to be talking particularly about this product. So make sure you sign up to that as well. Okay, let's get on with the show.
Can I just add something really quickly? This is a complete coincidence.
Mate, what's happening?
But I am wearing my iSims socks.
We are shilling for iSims.
Entire coincidence.
We are shilling for iSims. I can't believe it. Sponsors usually don't get this. I'm actually wearing iSims underwear. If you're very lucky and hang around, I might even show you those as well. This is the depth of our depravity here. Let's get on with it. So Adam, good to see you. And well done, by the way, genuinely speaking on the Movember thing. I'll keep promoting that and hope you're going to get over 1,000 for sure next couple of days. Let's have a look at, let's review the newsletter. Did you read it last week? And if so, what was interesting, man?
Yep. So I am a sourcing geek. And so when I see articles about sourcing, I probably read them first. So I liked Jan Tegzi's article about using Microsoft Teams to communicate with 250 million people. Of course, he didn't really mean communicate with 250 million people, but what he's trying to encourage recruiters and sourcers to do is to think outside the box.
Correct.
The person's not replying to your LinkedIn message. You know, they've not opened your in-mail. How else could you get, you can't find them on Facebook. How else can you get hold of them? There's so many different creative ways that you can get messages to people. I got a message to me on Pipedrive the other day. I had absolutely no idea that you could communicate with people using Pipedrive, but I just had a notification. I looked at it and somebody had sent me a message. So, you know, be creative about how you contact people.
That's it. And also, a cool thing about this from Jan is it's also making use of the contact management systems that are almost native in some of these platforms. So chat platforms like Slack, Microsoft Teams, and all the rest of it, they have it in there. They have a library of anybody who uses it, has an account with that software.
Yeah.
And if you know how the system works, then you know it's not even a hack. It simply reveals some of these addresses, messages, messaging channels to you. So don't forget what you're using normally and think, you know what, you could probably contact far more people than you might imagine. So do definitely read that post by Jan Tegzi. Jan's also got a new job after 6 years at SolarWinds. So big move for him. But he's moved to another security company. I think he's now director of talent there. He is a person you should be following. His blog is absolutely amazing. So make sure you do that. Okay, give us one more, man. A couple more, actually.
Yeah, so I can't remember who it was, but I looked at her personal user manual.
Oh, yes.
And the concept of a personal user manual.
Mm.
So I really think there's massive value in having a personal user manual and sharing that selectively with the people that really need to understand you. So there's definitely oddities about the way that I do things. And if people don't know that I do them in certain ways and why I do them because I'm programmed to do that, then they might think it's weird. And most of us have got different things like that. So being able to communicate this, in a way where somebody can quite easily just understand you is great. It looked a bit like a CV. And I think that no recruiter is going to read this, your personal user manual, but maybe your close colleagues will, maybe like close customers will, or suppliers will, or that type of thing. So there's a lot of value in explaining yourself to people, and not just in terms of your skills and what you can do, but how you operate as a human. But you've got to be pretty selective about who you share it with, or it could come across as really self-indulgent.
Yeah, I think so. I disagree with that self-indulgence side. I think ultimately you just put it out there and make it available for whoever wants to read it. You're not necessarily pushing it on people and saying, "Hey, I want to be treated like this." You're more or less saying, "Look, if we end up working in a team, this is how I respond best to various things. Like, you want to email me on Monday mornings? That's when I'm on email. So that's the optimal time for me. Maybe it's not so good if you're messaging me end of the day because I got to pick up kids or something like this." So Steph Smith, who I'm a big fan of. I met Steph ages ago when she was like just doing content for Top Tile or whatever. And she was one amazing blogger at the time, but she's now like a director of inbound marketing at HubSpot or something. So she's like, she's one of these people that just shot up her career like this. And as the first time I spoke to her, I thought, oh my goodness, this lady is like proper talent. And it was so obvious that she was going to be like such a big hit. And she's brilliant at audience building, brilliant at community. She makes a lot of, she's very much part of this creator economy as well. And because she has joined as this senior director role at HubSpot, she actually produced this user manual for her team to say, we're new to this. I'm a new sort of director here, but this is what you should know in terms of how we should interact or how I sort of best do things. And then I think she's encouraging the rest of her team to do likewise. So everyone's just on the kind of understands this is how best to handle that person. Very, very useful exercise. Even if you're working by yourself, I wonder whether it's a useful exercise to go ahead and do. So, you know, make sure you check that out. No problem at all, Tasia. Okay. Well, give us one more before we get into this, Adam.
Tasia, it was the link above, by the way. It wasn't that link that you were looking for about sourcing on Teams. But anyway, right. Okay. It's a bit of fun, but it's also, and it's also real pretty basic stuff. It's really clear. It's obvious, but it's quite fun to go and do it. What jobs marry with each other?
Right.
That was quite good. So it won't be a surprise for you to know that if you're a surgeon, who are you most likely to marry? Somebody else in healthcare. If you are, I looked up human resource managers, who else, who are you most likely to marry? Other managers, you know, stuff like that. So I'm not sure if you can actually use it for anything. You probably can't use it. I guess you could use it if you want to marry a surgeon. Well, the bad news is you probably need to go and train as a surgeon or some kind of a doctor or get to work in a operating theater.
Proximity is the key, isn't it? Like you've got to be in a environment where there are people that firstly, you know, of the gender that you're interested in, there's enough of them for this to work. So I was quite interested. I wonder whether recruiters marry recruiters, actually. I'm not sure whether that's necessarily the case. But HR people seem to marry HR people. So Nick, I'm not sure.
Yeah, no, they do. I mean, there's more. There are more. If you look at who recruiters are married to, the top of that list is definitely going to be recruiters. Definitely.
Right. Yeah. Probably the number one. Actually, let's ask a question to the crowd. I mean, if you're a recruiter and you're married, take a look at your spouse. And was that person a recruiter? Or was it somebody else that you met? Like, is this something that we do? I have no idea. Did you marry your recruiter? There you go. Debbie married an IT guy. Ala, who's a good friend of mine, she married also a tech guy as well. So there you go. Lots of tech people, lots of HR people are marrying tech people. So maybe that's a thing. I don't know. And perhaps
everyone's a tech person today.
Oh my goodness. That's four women recruiters in the chat stream right here have just said they've married tech. So maybe like women recruiter, male tech, it looks like.
All guys are in tech, are they not?
Well, I mean, there's an obvious gender imbalance there. So maybe that's also a factor, right? Tom has married a quality engineer. So maybe tech and recruiting, you know, we talk to each other. Maybe there's a way in which magic can happen there. Although you've got to wonder, like, how professional might that be? You know, you're like qualifying a candidate and just thinking.
It's also, let's do it in Wetherspoons. The other thing is there's maybe something about opposites attract as well, because recruiters are typically very right brain type of gregarious people, you know, quite extrovert, and engineers are often quite left brained and maybe, you know, a bit different. So you're getting the best of both worlds coming in here. Magic happens in that certain scenario.
Yeah, I totally think that's true as well. Because imagine going out with one of those like full on recruiters. It's like, oh my goodness, that's the last thing you want, isn't it? Jeremy, it's complete chaos.
Imagine if you're in-house talent acquisition, married to like agency, like bang on the phones type of person. Completely different.
I reckon that never happens. Like they're like hostile enemies, aren't they? That's like literally that's not happening.
It's water and oil.
Yeah, it might happen had they met at an early stage in their careers and they kind of forked off in different paths. But I can't imagine anybody I know now as a senior TA person, let's say, dating an agency manager or something like that. It's like, oh my goodness, this is strike me as particularly a good match. Anyway, it was a really interesting bit of data from a cool site called Flowing Data. They do loads of great visualizations. This was a bit of fun, obviously. We're not trying to make any big comments and whatnot, but it did seem to be some trends about who your life partner might be based on the job you had. All of this has huge implications, by the way, also on the remote work. We're talking about proximity being like a big factor in all of this. But if we're moving towards a world where physical proximity is no longer the thing, then presumably this effect will be less intense. Your idea of going to the office, meeting people, that was a huge way in which actually people meet their future partners through office and the intensity of being in that single space. But if we're now moving to a future where actually very distributed, you could be working with colleagues from different time zones, different locations, there isn't really a chance for physical kind of proximity to ever happen. And it maybe we need to think about other ways in which we find our partners and what have you. So anyway, we should set up a dating show, maybe. I don't know. Right. Okay. Let's talk about employee generated content, because that is what we're talking about. A super exciting thing. I always say you don't know anything about it, Adam, but you always then get upset. So do you know anything about EGC?
Well, I can tell you that I do. Yes, because in 2009, I set up a social media services business, and a lot of the work we were doing was helping hiring managers get more visible and create content and attract candidates. I've done a lot of that since. But the one thing that I really need to stress to recruiters is when you're on Zoom or you're on Teams or something and you're taking that briefing from that hiring manager, tell them you're about to interview them. It's going to take 4 minutes. You're going to ask them 4 questions. Why do you like working here? What are the most exciting things happening in your team? What are the main skills people need to get ahead in your industry? And what do you like outside of work? Just press record. 4 times 30 second videos takes just a couple of minutes to do. And that's content you can share everywhere. You can share it out when you're approaching candidates for the job. You can share it in marketing campaigns. You can do loads of things. I've got a load of other ideas as well, but that's the one that is like so easy to do.
Yeah. So just to repeat that, essentially when you're taking a briefing meeting or a briefing call with a hiring manager, record the call, get the consent obviously from the hiring manager, but record the call and let them know that you're going to use that content for marketing purposes. And in fact, this is some of the content that candidates really want to hear from. Who the direct line manager is often going to be the most important part of the decision-making process for the candidate. So why wouldn't a candidate want to hear from this person? So get that on record. I see no reason why this is something that is difficult for managers to do, especially in the COVID world where everyone's very used to Zooming now and video and so forth. I think it's just it should be a mandatory thing, but it's surprising that it isn't. But anyway, that's an example of EGC. Okay, let's bring on some of our friends from IBM because they have some really interesting case studies. Well, one of the biggest challenges of doing this is how do you actually get permission to do it? Especially when you've got like brand policies and stuff like this, in a big company like IBM, which I think, is one of the exemplars of, companies that have powerful brands and you can imagine it being quite well policed. How do recruiters actually manage to get the permission to do it? So I'm going to bring on some of the global talents and team here. Nick, I'm going to bring you on first and then Mariano and Catalina will bring you on in a moment. But let's bring Nick on and he can give us kind of the, he can set the scene for us, I guess. Let's see whether Nick can get this. There should be a pop-up on your screen saying you're being invited on screen. He's built himself a shed, actually. You might be able to see this in a moment, Adam. I wonder whether you want to give your take on it, the idea of a shed being, the place where, you can go out and do some work. And there he is. Nick, good to see you, sir.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. Very well. Nick, for the people who don't know you, can you quickly introduce yourself to the crowd, please?
Yeah, of course. So I'm Nick Thompson, massive geek when it comes to talent marketing, employer branding, whatever we want to call it in today's world. And I lead the talent marketing function here at IBM. So responsible for making sure our audiences who may or may not know IBM know what we're about, what we do, and why they should join us.
Nick, I'm going to jump straight in because it's one of the, like, some people might be confused as to, you know, why is this different from recruiting? Why is it different from marketing? How do you interface with those two functions? Because it seems to me you kind of got a foot in both sides. A lot of companies don't have this function. So how do you sort of operate with marketing? How do you operate with recruiters that actually, you know, contact candidates and bring them into the business?
Definitely. So the first thing is try and do this on your own little island and you've got it wrong. Like, what we do is a team sport. The amount of recruiters on this call that are already doing what we do, probably not at the scale of what we do, I hope, I cross my fingers, is huge. And if you're not doing this, Adam's just given you a reason and a way to do this this afternoon. So we connect with TA and the recruiters a lot. And we use this as a two-way communication and dialogue. This isn't me and my team in the ivory tower saying, tell your candidates these messages, because we've got some lovely content around that and that's what we want. That happens too much in our space, I'll be honest, way too much in our space of people going, candidates must know this. We work with our recruiters to tell us what the candidates are saying to them. I'm not interested in this role because of X, or I'm going to take this other role, or I'm just not sure on this, or could you help me understand that? They're the topics. That's the feedback we need. That creates the content that we create for people, not us going, Bake Off's cool content this week. Let's do something on that. And guess what? No one cares. Literally no one cares.
That's actually a really bit of a sort of information which I wasn't aware of. So you're saying that actually most people have the misconception that a talent marketing produces and pushes messaging to the rest of the business that then needs to be amplified out. What you're saying is actually what talent marketing needs to be doing is listening to the recruiters who are speaking to candidates and then figuring out what is wrong, why are they rejecting, why are they saying yes, why are they saying no, and then building the messaging around that. Tell me, what would you do if you found a no message? There was a consistent thing. Candidates are saying, you know what, nah, this didn't feel right. Like, that's is do you try and disguise that or do you how do you do that information?
Most of the time it's a not understanding and not knowing. It's a just not being aware of something, or having heard from Bob, your friend's uncle's auntie's cousin, who's a expert on everything including the company that you just approached. And a lot of it is just about understanding, where does that come from? What does that look like? Some of the times it's true. You can't get away from it. It's factual. That is what it is. Like, IBM is not a 9-to-5. Go in, you'll do the same thing for the next 20 years and away you go. And we're not ashamed of that. That we wouldn't be 111 years old if that's who we were. So sometimes it's actually people just know the wrong things and they don't, we've not told them, it's not visible, recruiters haven't shared it, recruiters don't know how to say it because sometimes it's challenging, it's difficult, but it's just around creating something that people can use and can talk about. If it is something that is bad, shall we say, and negative, is it? We did this previously at Vodafone with our retail stores. The world is all rosy. Everyone gets bonus. It's happy, happy, happy. It wasn't. They missed breaks. They didn't get targets. It was hard work. All we did was had a flood of applications that then dropped out later on or didn't stay past month one, week one. Start bringing it front and center and go, do you want a challenge? Do you want a battle? Do you want to help work as a team to hit targets, etc.? You get fewer applications, but you get the same number of conversions, and they stick around because they knew what they were signing up for. So I really don't want to use the phrase, but authenticity and everything is just it. You can lie about it. And from a TA perspective, we'll keep ourselves in our jobs because these people just leave pretty quickly. Or this whole quality of hire metric, getting the right people that come and stay. Why wouldn't we want to do that? Why wouldn't you want to put people off as much as attracting them to your company?
You know what? That's a really, really important thing that you've mentioned. So talent marketing is you're almost trying to deter the wrong candidate from applying because that's a waste of their effort. And it kind of clogs your pipeline of effort as well. That's extra work for the TA team. You don't want that. As well as attracting the right talent because they're the people who should be most fit. And oftentimes, recruiters try to just optimize for volume all the time. It's like, you know, whatever it takes to get like the
more
volume
is
in the
more
pipe,
we're more winning if we've got more. And yeah,
exactly right. Adam, you about to say something?
Well, yeah, I guess the other thing is when you are getting this information coming back that people are leaving a certain type of job because it's not what they were sold and it is actually shit, presumably that information does go back into the operation to say you need to fix this, so that we can say it's great, because right now we can't say it's great. It's just, we can't do that. So you have 100%. To fix it. So that loop.
And it's fixing it, but it's then changing that dialogue from we've got slides in our offices, we're this an amazing thing, to we're on a journey to be that amazing thing. And you're appealing to a different group of people. You're appealing to the, I want it made, I want it on a platter, and I want to just slide right in there and away we go, to I like where you're going. I want to be part of the journey to get there. And it's just engaging people in different ways.
Okay, that's a second, I think, really important point, which is you're not trying to present the business as the finished article. That's very much marketing from 20 years ago, where, you know, this is the glossy brochure version of marketing. What you're saying is, look, we are a human business. There's lots of moving parts. We're not there yet. We have the ambition to keep going. It's a journey that we're on. Do you want to join us on the journey? And again, that's almost a mindset shift in terms of how you present an outcome. It's like you're presenting the collective moving forward rather than, you know, here's the destination already. Cool. Okay.
Before we go on to employee generated content, one other quick thing I wanted to ask you about, Nick, was you said something about, you know, when you did your introduction, you said something about, you know, some people might know IBM, some people might not. I doubt there's many people applying to IBM that have never heard of it. But I do wonder whether you've got a double-edged sword in that. You've got a brand most people recognize, but at the same time, a lot of people won't really know what the company does now because it's evolved and changed and whatever. So what are the pros and cons of having such a big, well-known brand?
You're absolutely right. It's brilliant. But instead of doing a here's who we are, here's what we do for ABC company that no one's ever heard of, you've got to get people to be like, forget what you knew. So you've got to uneducate them. You've got to, like Men in Black, erase their memories and then educate them again. And if someone's never heard of a brand or a company, there are no preconceptions. The preconceptions are what are formed on their experiences and what they have. Whereas we still get it today. I love the IBM ThinkPads. Well, you've shown your age straight away there. That's definitely dated everybody there. And we don't make that anymore. That's not who we are. We're a cloud and AI business. And it's just, it was very, very similar at Vodafone. Everyone knew us as a retail store. We weren't just a retail store. So you've got to do the whole, forget what you know, come and learn again. And it's challenging perceptions, and that's hard because people form opinions, and that's fact because it was an opinion they got told by Uncle Johnny.
It's almost one of those where you've got...
Yeah, you've got the...
Go on.
I was going to say you've got the image of the. So I'm 44. I've got the image of the guy in the like trench coat, carrying his briefcase, selling something, and you never get fired for buying IBM.
Yep.
You know, that type of thing makes IBM probably seem a little bit dated. Yep. Actually, you never get fired for safe, a bit safe, yep. And like
corporate,
you
know, corporate
so many
America
different things
and
that people
just
get. Yeah.
People just yeah. go there and live their lives doing the same things day in, day out. And
yeah,
I mean, how for 29 years, next year will be the 30th year of the company in the US with the most patents awarded to them each year. You don't get that being that gray suit, trench coat company, no. right?
No.
It's almost one of those where you've got sort of a weird type of challenge because the brand is so powerful. It's just like it's locked into people's minds. And when companies evolve, as they always do, you have to constantly re-educate and sometimes take some risks. Because if you do rebrand or, you know, there's a strong enough pivot, sometimes you need to lose some of your previous brand value and build it back up again in order to get somewhere. And we do know, for instance, that brand recognition is one of the big drivers behind people applying to jobs. You know, if they see a brand they recognize, they're more likely to apply, irrespective of what brand connotations associated with that brand. So it's one of those where you win one area to lose in another. You got to just balance that out. Okay. Before we bring on Mariano and Catalina, Nick, I just wanted, and we'll keep you on screen, by the way, Nick. I just wanted to, again, focus now onto the EGC aspect, employee-generated content. We kind of all share the agreement now that the whole corporate brochure is out the window. No one cares for that. They distrust that messaging. What we want to see is the people who are doing the job actually talking about the job. And, you know, in an unscripted and authentic way, all this sounds amazing, but a lot of recruiters struggle to activate this. You know, I want to do this, but what do I do? Like give a developer an iPhone and get him to shoot something. How does it actually move from idea to actually collecting this content?
Yeah. And the very, very first thing to say with that, Hung, is so many people get stuck at this stage chasing perfection or chasing the dream of perfection. Just bloody do it. Just start. Just get it out there. And don't over-edit this. You don't need Spielberg. You don't need Tarantino. You do just need this conversation on a Zoom call being recorded and put out there as an interview, as a conversation. Don't need to mess around with perfectly scripted storyboards. The simplest thing to do and the easiest way to start is every single thing we do, every conversation I have with IBMers or any other company is, why do you do what you do at IBM rather than anywhere else? That's my starting question on every single conversation. And just as you interview your candidates, interview the answers there, probe, dig a little bit deeper, understand. So Hung, why is that? What is it? And at some point, you'll see the eyes light up, the body language change, and there's like, I do it for this. Like, this is why I do it. That's the story that you then go, can we just record this bit? Can we just talk about that? And it doesn't always have to be video. Video is the best form, there is no doubt, because communication is tonality and body language, not just the words we use. So video gets across the most part of it. But think about, where do you start hiring the most? Which roles do you hire the most each week, each month, each year? And then which roles do you struggle to hire? Which ones are you having to just put not even a little bit more work, but a whole heap more work into it? That's where you start producing your content. That's where you start saying to people, why are you at our company? What is it that gets you out of bed each morning? And why do you do what you do here rather than anywhere else?
Right.
And that don't seems, tell them what to say.
Yeah. That seems like a totally doable thing, doesn't it, folks? You know, so here's how you do it. You're hiring for a load of roles. Identify the roles that are critically important for you, and you're spending more time than you want to on these positions. That's where you start. And that's when you kind of interact with somebody who's already doing the job, and you ask them that question. Why are you working, and why are you doing it for this company and no one else? And then get that on record and get it out there. Just push it out and see what happens. You can worry about the amplification later, but just do it first. That's totally doable, it seems to me. I would imagine less than 1% of recruiters would even do that.
And what I would say, Hung, is there's two things that I would say probe further if you get these answers. And those two things are variety and the people. If you get those as your answers, just keep going, because this space of employee, user-generated content, talent marketing content, if I had a penny for every time someone said the variety or the people, no 2 days are the same, blah, 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 I'd be well up there in the richest people on this planet. Like, it'd be nuts. What about the people? What about the variety? Like, give us something. Don't accept that as the answer. Just go, what about the variety? Talk to us about the variety, because that's just bland. That's what they see everywhere. That's what most talent marketing teams do. It doesn't work.
Yeah, no cliches. You got to really get into the depth of what this is. Yeah. And we all know when people are giving you an answer that they think you want to hear, you've got a kind of the skill of your, I guess, interview technique is to let them know that you're not there representing corporate. What you're doing is trying to get a real human story out and tell their story to the external market. Okay, super interesting. Let's get some of your team on board the screen here, Nick, and let's see whether we can talk about some real examples as to how we've got this to work. So let's bring on Mariano and Catalina together, actually, and Nick, we'll keep you on. I think we'll keep five people on the screen for this. Oh, there's two Catalinas here. I think I'll go for this one. That's exciting. Oh, by the way, if anybody's got any questions for Nick or Catalina or anybody on screen, please use the ask a question function at the bottom and pop your question down there. That's where we're basically going to go to at the end of the show, and we'll deal with the questions there. So ask the questions at the bottom of the screen. Okay, we've got Mariano here. Mariano, welcome to the show. For the people who don't know you, would you like to introduce yourself real quick, please?
Hey, Hung. Yeah, sure. So I've been at IBM for, I work with Nick, of course. I'm on his team. I've been at IBM for almost 14 years now, and I'm the digital lead for recruitment marketing. That I'm based in Buenos Aires, Argentina. So we are a global team. That's pretty much it. Quick intro.
Great to have you on board here. Catalina, we can't see you, I'm afraid. I think that it says that you're trying to connect and accept, but we're not seeing you on screen as of yet. What I'm going to try and do is I'll send you another invite. Just accept that and see whether we can get you back on. Let's talk about sort of the identifying the employees to speak to. So how do you do that? When you're sort of thinking about EGC, it's all well and good, but maybe the guys that are going to volunteer to do, you think, actually, no, that's not what we want. Maybe some of the other people you think, like, they're hidden from you. Like, you don't know whether they've got great stories to tell. How do you identify people with the great stories?
Mm-hmm. Nick, one, you two.
Yeah, I was going to say, first things on this is everyone has a story to tell. The medium changes. Some people have a face for radio. Some people have a voice for text. Don't make everybody go on video. Think about their audience. Think about who they are. But also think about where would they go? If somebody goes to Discord, don't make them do a video, because it doesn't work on Discord. So ask them what they're comfortable and what they'd engage with, etc. The other bit is, in a lot of companies, you already have influencers or micro influencers, if that's what we want to call it, they're already producing content. And a bit of social listening, a bit of looking on online, who's talking about your brand with hashtags and all of that lot, you find them quickly. The other part, who are your high performers in the business? Who are the people out of your end of year performance reviews, if that's how you're still running, or quarterly or whatever it looks like? Ask them, engage them. Those that have been recognized, those that have hit all of their sales targets, you want to mirror those folk. So you want to get them talking about what you do. And then Mariano is our king of social listening and finds IBMers going to be Olympians and a whole other bunch of different things by just being on Twitter and just listening on Twitter.
So two things there, Nick. Thank you very much for that. Firstly, like identify the employees that actually have developed their own audience in their own efforts. I mean, everyone's on social media. Everyone has the ability to broadcast. You might discover someone with a massive TikTok following, for instance, that could be doing a job that may be totally unrelated to marketing, but they themselves have demonstrated to be amazing marketers. What tooling do you use to do this? Is there a way, is there a product that you use to kind of do this type of searching?
There's a whole variety of products out there. Start by just using your company's hashtags. Like, there are Social Bakers is one of them out there. There are so many different tools. We use Sprinklr. Just type a hashtag into Twitter and see if the same names keep coming up. Like, just be simple about this. Look on your LinkedIn Life pages. You'll have content from your company's employees that will be shared. You can overkill this with tech. This is just basic. Speak to your talent development functions, your HR business partners, or who are your top performers and why. You don't need to overkill this. Tech can get in the way here.
Yeah, so basically there is tooling out there for a very large scale company like IBM. Obviously, you need to have, it will be useful, particularly globally, right? I mean, maybe you want to build brand in different territories also. So tooling can help. But then there's also information like who are the top performers. That is information that I assume is internally public, or at least it's not super secret. And you will be able to identify who those folks are, and you can simply ask them, say, you know, that what would you ask them? Mariano, have you got a thought on this? I've identified someone in the business. I think they're amazing. They'd be a great ambassador for the company. Like, what do you say to get this person who, you know, getting on with their normal day to day? How do you make them into a person that's prepared to participate here?
Yeah, and so I will add 2 points there. So find those top performers, but it needs to be people that candidates can relate to, right? So for example, if I'm hiring data scientists and I'm going to talk with the data scientists, I'm not going to talk with the VP of data scientists, that data science at IBM. I want a real data scientist. But also, I mean, since I have a background in journalism, right, I just, like Nick said before, it's like some kind of an investigation that we do when we ask the questions, you know? And sometimes you get the, like Nick said, when you're just talk to people, that's step number one. When you talk to people, you'll see if they are ready to participate, if they are people who are willing to, you know, show up in front of camera or more like just like a blog or something, you know. But just by talking to people in the beginning, you'll get that feeling, you know. Sometimes I had sorry, Carolina, can you just mute your computer? I think you don't have I have some feedback on my, do you have it also, guys?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, thank you. There we go. Thank you. So sometimes I had conversations with IBMers that I wanted to share their stories, and it said like, okay, this might not be the right person to put in front of the camera because, like Nick said, not all of us are prepared for the same medium, you know?
So that could be a very difficult conversation, and we'll go to that. Like sometimes that's one of the hazards, right? So you might end up getting employees that volunteer themselves forward, But you know, from your professional judgment, you can say, you know what, this is probably not someone would push forward as an ambassador. How do you handle that situation? We'll come back to that, Mariano, in a way. But let's say hello to Catalina. Catalina, great to see you. Can you quickly introduce yourself? Who are you and what it is you do?
Hi, guys. So first of all, how's the feedback? Is it really bad?
I think it's depending on
my mic.
No, it's not not as bad now.
It depends on whoever's speaking, though. So I think they can pick up the audio from your speaker somewhere, I think.
Okay. Hopefully this works. The connection earlier with the Chrome was telling me something about my mic, so I had to change up. But my name is Catalina Trevino. I'm the global content creator for IBM Talent Acquisition. So a lot of what I do is I really specialize in what the story, that storytelling aspect of IBM is. So, we were talking storytelling and, you know, how do you move from idea to collecting? And I'm sitting there going, me, choose me. So, but essentially what I do is, you know, I can advise on global long-term plans as far as content goes. And also, you know, basically the creator of a lot of those videos that you're seeing on talent acquisitions or related to talent acquisitions. So
that and Mariano's just pinged me power cut in Argentina. So he's just been wiped out.
We've lost him. That's okay. So Catalina, let's go straight to this. When you're sort of trying to get an employee to tell a particular story, like, is that against the theme that you have decided to run, or is it driven from what the employee is going to tell you?
Well, I got to tell you, it starts from asking the right questions. I let them drive the conversation, but we ask those open-ended questions. You know, for example, I don't, you know, and also keeping in mind as the creator, you're keeping in mind, okay, what is going to matter, like the questions they're going to answer, what's going to matter to the IBMer, what's going to matter to the non-IBMer, those candidates who could be watching us, who could consider us an employer of choice, right? And so we're asking those questions, but letting them tell our story. And I think that's the whole strategy, that it's not unscripted, but it's asking the right questions. So what's a right question, what's not, you know, I think, why do you love IBM? Okay, sounds good. But I think there's a deeper question you can ask. I think there's something more, something like, you know, tell me about a project that you've done that has excited you. Then you're going to pull that passion out of that person, but you're also going to get some important info that maybe the candidate who could be considering us say, oh, that's pretty cool. I want to be a part of that, you know? So.
Yeah. And at the end of the day, it is about sort of trying to tell stories that ultimately do attract candidates. So one of the things I think is true to say, generally candidates are a little bit have immunized themselves from traditional marketing because they kind of distrust that stuff. But they want to see how people actually do the job. And you know, how do the employees actually talk to talk that haven't been, you know, professionally trained or professionally scripted to do that. Is there any kind of let's go back. Go ahead, Adam. Yeah.
Can I ask Catalina, is it useful to go and ask people why they don't like working at IBM as well?
You know,
like the people who work for the company, so that you've got that.
Yeah. I actually think that is actually useful information, because then you take that back to your stakeholders and say, what's up? You know, these are what individuals are saying, you know, and I think it's all ears. When you're listening to content coming through, you keep an eye on that, because, you know, you never know, you keep an eye and then you pass that along to the right person if that's the case.
So that's really interesting, Catalina.
I guess that also helps you to determine. I've got a delay, I think.
I think you do, Adam. But no worries. Let me go on ahead. You can go say what you were about to say.
I was just going to say, I guess that also helps you to determine what not to amplify. So if you're getting feedback, which is, yeah, the food in the office is rubbish, and it stops you saying, by the way, the food in the office is terrific.
Yeah, absolutely.
100%. And as Catalina said, feed it back to make sure they fix the food in the office, and that's what we're looking for.
Sometimes I wonder whether these things might also help you to, it might give you an aspirational story also. Like if you're getting a lot of, if you're getting a theme from the content coming back that actually, you know, this isn't optimal, this could be better. This may be an opportunity for you to think, okay, let's reposition this. Yes, it's a challenge, but we can reposition it as something we're going to try and solve and go towards.
You know, Hung, on that, what makes me think of that is, what about talking to individuals in your company who perhaps they left and they came back? So that's kind of a similar situation. You want to know why. And there you'll find some useful information when you're telling that story, that individual is telling their story. We've got competitors out there, right? And so you tell that story, you have that individual kind of who maybe consider us think, okay, this is someone who has come back and telling their story as to why. So there's kind of a situation where you could come back and make some content that spins in that manner as far as, yeah.
The other one, Hung, if you want to get really sneaky with this, and I already know Adam's going to like this straight away, is when you're speaking to candidates at other companies and find out what doesn't work there and produce content at your company as to why you're better than X at X. It doesn't need to be attacking.
Come and join us at IBM so that you never have to see Dave White ever again.
It's probably slightly less attacking than that, Adam. But yeah, the right principles of especially in this whole world where a lot of companies are going back to offices and a lot aren't. If a company has mandated people are back in an office 5 days a week and your company isn't, and they're your direct competitor for talent, you should be producing content on that, not shamedly of, we're not going back to an office, look at us, no. Talk about the employees in your companies and what does it mean to them of, I've got 2 hours a day where I can spend time with a family, where I'm not commuting and I'm not doing this. And that's where you get it across and people are like, 2 hours a day stuck on a train, 2 hours a day with family and loved one. You dig in without calling them out.
Yeah. You know what? That's a really smart thing to think about. So basically, you can kind of do a SWOT analysis between you and your competitors, let's say. You're competing, let's say, for the same kind of talent. But then you understand where their weaknesses are and where your strengths might be and start producing content around that with EGC. So in other words, you get an employee to talk, in your example, to talk about how they drop their kids off on a Wednesday, or you know, if there's a project that they have to do that otherwise would be very difficult to do if they were locked into a 9-to-5 type scenario, you can go ahead and do that. Catalina and Nick, let's talk about like one project that you did run, or one campaign that you did run in IBM that you think, you know what, we really did nail this. Is there anything that you think was particularly satisfactory about the journey that a project that you collaborated on and worked with?
Everyday influencer campaign that we've just run, Hung. I think we shared it with you recently and happy to kind of share it out wider. But this was a group of IBMers who basically did Instagram takeovers through, we use iSIMS Video Studio to create themselves answering questions. And it was things like, do you want to know about my background? Do you want to know about my work, for example? Like which one do you want to know about? And we put it out on Instagram stories and we let our audience vote on what they wanted to know. And then we spoke about those next bits and pieces, and they spoke about what came next.
Can you share an example of that? I think people would love to see a video of this. Is there something that they can have a look at that you can?
Yeah, so chat? We'll dig something out in a second, ping it over. I'm sure Catalina's got a few bits and pieces, but life at IBM on Instagram, you'll see the wrap up and all the stories on there as well. But it really was user generated content and audience driven content, which was for us generation two of the next step forward on this as well.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on this, Catalina?
All right, this was a really fun project because we were also experiencing, I mean, we've been, if I'm being honest, we've been on Instagram Reels in particular, so very raw format, for about 6 months now. So this was a really big campaign where we were trying to leverage that. You know, you've got 70K views from all over the world, and the hope for that this project was to relate more with our audience. We were talking about earlier, you know, what IBM is, and, you know, we've been around for a long time, and there's a perception, right? There's a perception that we're old school. But, you know, we've got a mix of people with incredible amounts of talent here at IBM. And we wanted to show that people from all walks, all over the world, showing you different jobs, you know, different jobs that they do and whatnot. And then for those of the individuals who did not catch that project, essentially, we were posting a reel, an Instagram reel of the individual. Imagine like a teaser promo about them, right? Under 1 minute, it gets posted. And then, so we teased them the day before. And then the day after, we would have them take over our Instagram. And what we were doing to engage with individuals is we were using polls. So we were asking questions to those who were watching us. What do you want to hear? What next do you want to know about this individual? It may be something about their personal life, something about their job, where they live. So it was really interesting because, you know, trial and error. We like to experiment with our team for sure. But it really was a success. 70K views. And again, it's just showing a different side of us and testing something new. Going back to what Nick was saying, just do it. Just try it. I mean, and just, if all else, you just learn from it. Or if someone else is doing it, do it better.
You know what? That sounds like a really cheap experiment as well, Catalina, you know, where you're talking about 70K views of people looking at IBM content. But really what's happened is that this person's produced 60 seconds worth of video content. And maybe they've like spend a bit of time interacting with the audience due to the poll and whatnot. That's overall not like not a huge amount of work. It seems like it's a very, very doable thing for anybody with a mobile phone, basically. So sometimes we can be a little bit intimidated by the idea of marketing, especially video content, and think it needs to be this, like, you know, you need studios, you need production, you need all of this. We actually have like an amazing device in our hands, and we need to, all of our employees have this device. They can go ahead and use it. Yeah, excellent. And Nick, thank you for sharing some of those things as well. I would recommend people check this out. I've had a look just now, actually. Very straightforward, 60 seconds to the camera. And this is the kind of stuff that if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. It's like very cheap to produce, didn't hurt anybody. But if it does work, it's going to land to a lot more people understanding who IBM is, humanizing the brand as we go. Okay.
Quick one, Hung. I do just want to give one quick bit of advice for everyone, and the benefit of UGC and EGC is the people that are in it will share this like nuts. And their mums will, their friends will, their colleagues will. They may take the mick out of them for doing it as well. And actually, what you end up doing is winning against the social algorithms because it's been shared a number of times. So you will get far more organic reach by share than by putting money behind this. So tell them to share it. We're looking at an incentive program similar to YouTube, where people will get different badges based on how many views their videos and content has had, because then you're not rewarding on production, you're rewarding on views and interactions, and that's what you really want. That's what you're after.
All right. So there's actually an internal incentive for the producers to actually maximize views. So, you know, yes, they're going to do a 60 seconds a camera, but you know what? There's a little bit of a game going on. It would be great if they could get, you know, more than the next person. So simple gaming mechanics.
And it's a laptop sticker hung. Like, there's no like silver plaques or platinum plaques or anything like this. It's going to be a laptop sticker.
We are becoming more aware, though, as to how important status is and social capital is. And even if it's a jocular thing and it's a comedic thing with a bunch of friends or whatnot or your colleagues, it's still a kind of a cool thing to have. So monetary reward is one thing, but this social reward, I think, is very, very powerful. Okay, we actually have a few questions in the stream here, so let's go ahead and try and answer these. Let's go with Amanda first. Amanda's saying, okay, where do you typically integrate employee-generated content within the recruiting process? So in other words, taking it down to the tactical level, is there a situation, like, when do you actually go ahead and do this?
The start to the end. There is no reason why this can't fit in the beginning and it can't sit in the middle and at every step throughout it. Because the more you do that, the more people realize that's the norm, that's how you do it. One thing I would say is do consider diversity of people through a journey. And every company right now is saying, we're the most diverse company out there, blah, blah, blah. Except you've got all purple people the whole way through your experience talking about content. People want to see someone like themselves. That's what employee generated content allows you to do. But an interview, just a montage video of five people wishing them good luck, congratulations at offer stage from another five people.
You know what?
It doesn't need to be big.
Those are two brilliant ideas. Imagine that. If you have a candidate going to interview, let's say at an advanced stage, and you have a bunch of the stakeholders that have interviewed them before, say, hey, just shoot a quick montage and say, look, good luck. Really hope you make through. That's such a powerful thing. I mean, how wonderful would that be to receive? I mean, I've never experienced that as a candidate going through this type of experience, but it would totally differentiate that employer that took the effort to go ahead and do that. Catalina, let's ask you this next question. This is from Charlene. Charlene's saying, is it worth having content showcasing your overall business environment, i.e. filming people going about their business? And if so, do you need everyone's permission that they're in that video? So in other words, I think what Charlene is saying is that I'm going to just shoot this video randomly in office, let's say in office environment. Do I need to get everyone to sign a waiver? I mean, what's the situation there?
All right. Can you guys hear me? There we go. So first question or first answer is yes, I think it's definitely worth showing, taking people kind of a day in the life. Doesn't have to be so corporate. It can be very raw. And then, you know, easy cuts, put it together, /. So yes, I think you can show people day in the life. Go get your coffee. Go show them where your desk. Go show them what you're working on. However, something that you need to be mindful of when you are shooting is, you know, what are your rules? What are your compliance rules as far as, you know, if there is something, you know, that is shown in the background, a logo, just say, or even you want to be careful if there's a whiteboard behind you and there's some strategy showing. So you want to be mindful of that, right? You want to be mindful if you're showing, oh yeah, I'm working on a project, be mindful what's on your computer also, to not give away something that you may not want to give away, right? Signing a waiver. For the individuals who are, so if you're shooting B-roll, B-roll is just that additional video. For those who don't know, additional video of just say, you know, so-and-so working, it's not the interview part. And so you want to, if you are showing someone, you do want them to sign a waiver, yes. However, if it's, you know, random people in the background and you can't really see them, they're not the focus of what's happening, they don't need to sign a waiver.
You know what? Adam just said something quite interesting there, where it's basic. Where maybe in future we can think about it is like a mandatory thing within an employee contract. To say, look, there's going to be some times when we're going to be shooting stuff. We're a very transparent business. We assume you're going to be okay with this. If you're not, then please say so, and then you know you can remove yourself from that situation if you want or what have you.
I was going to say we find if it's office stuff. Put posters up around the area the week before, put a comms out and say, don't sit here if you don't want to be on camera. We're filming next Tuesday. And people will self-select themselves out of that. Or what you find out is they come in dressed up better than they've ever been before and hair done, new outfits, stylists done, like...
I was going to say, you're going to get some people turn up glammed up, aren't you? And then you get some idiot turning up in fancy dress. That's going to happen. Okay, listen, a few things. Adam, I think you might need to go, don't you? So let me say goodbye to you, Adam. I'll see you next week. Keep good luck on the rugby tomorrow. A few more questions I want to keep with us because I think these are quite interesting to explore. But one thing I forgot to do, which I usually do on this, is that we want the conversation to continue even after this show finishes. So if you're interested in employee generated content and you want to talk to people on screen or people in the chat stream here, please make sure you continue the conversation. Take a moment to share your LinkedIn profile in the chat stream now and make sure you connect with everyone you see there. I see no reason why anybody should not talk to each other just because of this show is going to come to an end. So share your LinkedIn into the chat stream now and make sure you connect with everyone else here. We're all interested in employee-generated content. Okay, let's move on to, I think we've done the answering of that, Charlene. Let's go to the next question. This is Caroline Owen. Caroline's thought about, okay, you've talked about a lot of external perception of IBM. Did you test this with external focus groups? Or, you know, how did you actually know about these things? Nick, let's go to you on this because I think you actually introduced that idea. Preconceptions about IBM, like how did you know?
Yeah, and we ask so many people, like you're absolutely right. Like ask external focus groups, ask people that are in your CRM that have applied, ask new hires as they join. I love to ask the question for people 6 months in of what did you think of IBM before you started? What do you think now? And it's really difficult a lot of the time to have true external people that haven't come to your company and haven't applied and haven't had an experience with you. But that's also not needed to start. Like that's the cherry on the cake. That's the icing. That comes later. Ask your applicants what they think of you. When you're reaching out to candidates and they say no, ask them. When you email them and they don't come back, do a follow-up as you always should and just go, I'd love to understand why you've not responded. What have we done wrong? Is it us? Is it you? Where are we at? And see what they say.
You know what? So Caroline, the point is there's multiple opportunities to ask. There doesn't have to be a specific project to ask people. Constantly ask people about this. Okay, Caroline, let's ask you this question. This is from Adam, who's just left us, but I thought it was really quite clever. So outside of this industry, outside of you know yourself, I mean, are there other companies that you think, you know what, they've done a great job with this employee-generated program? That's really cool. Any ideas on that?
Nick, come in for help.
I'm going to help you here. I love Nikon. It's not employee generated content. It's user generated content. And their marketing campaigns are user generated content driven. Their photos that are used on everything are their users using their products and services. We see this everywhere in marketing. Product placement, name dropping, that's user-generated content.
I'd love to see some material there. If anybody's got a link to Nikon and some of the stuff that Nick's talking about, can you pop it into the chat stream? I think that might be a very useful thing to examine and look on. Okay, as we're coming to the end of the show, let's leave the audience with a few tips that you two want to give. There may be one recruiter. I know what people are going to say. People are going to watch this, say, look, this is IBM. They've got a particular talent marketing team. They've got all the resourcing, yada, yada. I'm one person. I want to do this. How do I do it myself? What's your advice? Go to you first with that, Catalina.
Sorry, Catalina.
How about now? All right. I want to go back to a question that was asked earlier about how do you even do it? How do you even start? So I think one of the first things, it's going back to sitting back and trying to figure out what are the questions you want to ask? What questions are going to matter? What questions are going to matter to those who are in the business and those who, you know, candidates who may be interested, right? And then you just start reaching out to people. We keep saying, you just do it. You do. And so you got to talk to a lot of people. You start reaching out to individuals who may want to be involved in these videos. And, you know, you can even empower them, have them get even more involved by not just doing the interview, whether it's using iSIMS or another platform, but, you know, ask them to shoot some B-roll, show us a day in the life. And then you leave it to them. You don't give them all the rules. The guidelines you provide them will empower them. And those guidelines look something like, you know, here's, you know, be aware of your audio and your lighting. Be aware of logos. Be aware of showing what we were talking about, the board. But you let them do it. And then, you know, you come back and that content comes back even more authentic. So you really just empower them and you become kind of like that guide. If they need help with a shot list, you can be there for that. So I think it's all about empowering people and you just get started.
And you know what? One thing that is definitely true is that everyone's ability to produce video content has just like massively improved. You know, we're all like much better. You transport us all back like, you know, 5 years, 10 years ago. We're all like pretty much like semi-pro at doing this now. So the quality of the content is going to be much better than you might expect, even though you're sitting there with your pro hat on. These amateurs actually might have some very good ideas to try. Okay, Nick, go to you. Is there a one piece of advice that you could give to a young person or a solo person in a recruiting department that wants to give this a shot? What would you say?
Start, try, begin. No content is perfect. The more perfect it becomes, the worse it actually performs. Like rubbish content in your eyes, you're not the people you're trying to attract, you're trying to engage. If the audience is good and you're getting the numbers, keep doing it. Like, just start today.
Do you know what? I think that's just a call to action that anybody can really embrace. And if you just took a moment to check out some of the most popular people on YouTube or TikTok or Instagram, you might be surprised as to how many views what a fairly mundane topic, fairly like averagely shot video might actually get. People just want to see what's going on. It doesn't have to be a flashy video with lots of like overproduction on it. People just want to know. And I think if you have a brand like IBM in particular, that is well known, you know, what is under the hood of this business? You know, who are the people working on it? That's a fascinating thing. Okay, listen, folks, this has been a great show. I'm sorry a little bit for, particularly for you, Catalina, that I've had to put you on mute here and then and like kind of move you back in the forwards. And I'm really sorry for Mariano, who made an appearance and then suddenly got cut off and we couldn't bring him back. But it's been great listening and learning from you too. Would you like to share some of the IBM channels actually on the chat stream before we let you go? Because I think people might want to take a little bit of, okay, we've listened to it, but let's have a look at some examples as to how this might look. And that may give people the inspiration to do it on their own, which I think is a good thing. The further we move away from overproduction, the better, in my opinion. We just need to get more honest when it comes to speaking to the market. I think we have a thirst for this. So I think it's our job and responsibility to make that communication clear. Okay, that's about it, everybody. I just want to thank everybody. Oh, hang on. We're still going to put this stuff in. Okay, great. Yes, and it's on IBM.com. Amazing. Great stuff. Fantastic. Thank you, Nick. So Nick, Catalina, and Mariano, if you're still with us somewhere on the ether, thank you so much for joining us on the show. Hopefully we'll get you back at some other point. I'd love to, this obviously we've only scratched the surface of this. We'd love to maybe do another one where we could show some of the footage maybe. I mean, would that be interesting, folks? I'd be like super interested to know. And then see how your journey's going, because you guys are still on this journey, right? There's no end point to this.
Talent
marketing doesn't stop. You got to keep going. So let's keep going and see where we're at. Okay, you two, thank you so much, and we'll see you soon. Wasn't that great, everybody? I thought that was really very interesting indeed. So please do follow the social channels that IBM have just put out there. I think if you're a person in recruiting, person in employer branding, or even in marketing, these things might be super interesting for you to get some inspiration. So go ahead and check that out. That would be very interesting for you indeed. Okay, that's about it, folks. We are back next week as we always are. We've got a super interesting show. Why? Because we are going to be talking about what recruiters want. If you're in a business and you're hiring for your team, you're hiring for recruiters and struggling to do that, we are going to be speaking to recruiters on the market and then figuring out exactly what it is that they are thinking about when they're evaluating jobs. It's also a situation where we're going to present some of the early data, provisional insights, if you like, from the what recruiters want survey, which I've been conducting, and hopefully you've helped fill in. So if you are a person that is looking to hire recruiters, this should be a show you should be checking out. Follow the channel and register on the show, and then we can catch up with you next week on this. Okay, that's about it. We'll see you next week. Thank you very much.